2. I was 10 years old when my parents bought the lot in Arizona. We were on a 2-week vacation, visiting relatives in Colorado. Obnoxious redneck cousins who pretended to like me and my brother when the adults were around, but tortured us once the parents were looking the other way. On the return trip to California, my dad had scheduled a 3-day stop-off in Arizona, deciding that if we were going to go to the Four Corners area, we should take the opportunity to see the Grand Canyon. It was nice to be with just our immediate family again. And as we traveled down from northern New Mexico on the unlikely named Highway 666, I was, for the first time on the trip, genuinely happy. The book Blue Highways had been a bestseller a few years prior, and my dad had read it and been inspired. He wanted to travel the country using back roads, so rather than drive Interstate 40, we took smaller roads through the overlapping reservations of western New Mexico and eastern Arizona. In the back seat, between me and my brother Billy, was a pile of books. On top was a Sunset publication titled Indian Country. And when we weren't playing one of the travel games we'd gotten at McDonald's, I used the book to check out where we'd been and where we were going. There were maps inside, and photographs, and descriptions of scenic sites. I looked up the Hubble Trading Post, which a sign on the side of the road had said was 75 miles ahead. "Can we stop by the trading post?" I asked. "Sure," my dad said. Scattered here and there across the flattened landscape were hogans and houses and trailers. Up ahead was a gas station and a surprisingly large Bash's supermarket. Billy had to go to the bathroom, so my dad pulled into the parking lot and we went inside, looking for a restroom. Ours were the only white faces in the grocery store, and we were the only ones speaking English. Everyone else was talking in a Native American language. Navajo? Hopi? And I understood for the first time what it must be like for immigrants coming to this country. Actually, we were immigrants, I realized. These were the original residents of this land, and to them, we were foreign interlopers. It was uncomfortable for all of us, and my dad went into the bathroom with Billy when my mom and I remained close together outside the door. As soon as Billy was done, we were back in the car and on the road again. We spent the night at a hotel made out of red rocks adjacent to the Cameron Trading Post. Perched on the edge of a gorge carved by the Little Colorado River, the hotel's claim to fame was the fact that Waylon Jennings had spent his honeymoon there. Other tourists beside ourselves were staying at the lodge, and even without a swimming pool, Billy and I had fun. The Grand Canyon, when we reached it the next morning, was so massive as to be overwhelming. We drove from lookout point to lookout point, and the canyon was so enormous that, over the space of 20 miles, the views were nearly identical. It was only the differences at the top, where we were, that brought some variety to the landscape. And we spent most of the day exploring Grand Canyon Village, the touristy collection of hotels and shops and historic buildings that lined a populated stretch of the South Rim. Still wanting to stay on the side roads, the AAA maps blue highways, my dad did not take the interstate to Phoenix the following day, but instead followed a patchwork of smaller rural routes out of Flagstaff and over the Mogollon Rim, a massive plateau which my Sunset book said was home to the largest stand of ponderosa pines in the world. Driving down the south side of the escarpment, we saw a small town nestled in a broad valley between heavily wooded hills. The 2-lane highway wound in a switchback to the bottom, where tall pine trees cast dappled shadows on the blacktop. Ahead, a green sign at the side of the highway marked the town limit. "Welcome to Randall," Billy read aloud. "Founded 1881, elevation 4,260 feet, population 4,260. "Hey," he said, "the population's the same as the elevation." "That's weird," I told him. "Believe it or not." "Not that weird." It was another mile or two before we saw the first building in town, a church, one of those little white-steepled ones you see in movies. The small parking lot before it was dirt, and behind was a stand of dark green ponderosas. It looked like something out of a Norman Rockwell painting. So did the quaint downtown that followed. There was a brick hardware store with adjacent nursery, a video store, a bank, a fire station, a pharmacy next to a doctor's office, a bakery, a jeweler's, a barber shop, a feed and grain store, a couple of gas stations, a post office, a grocery, a laundromat, a library, and several other businesses that lined both sides of the highway for 3 or 4 blocks. My mom thought it was the cutest town she'd ever seen. And instead of just passing through, she had my dad drive down side streets, through neighborhoods of cottages and cabins and single-story homes. Behind the house was a trailer park, and past the trailer park, a dirt road that led to a series of large cattle ranches. The sky, far bluer than it ever appeared in California, was filled with white puffy clouds. And though this was Arizona in the summer, the temperature was pleasant, the area cooled by a gentle mountain breeze. "I could see myself living here," Mom said. We ate a lunch of hamburgers and fries at a restaurant called the North Fork, a dark bar-like place with wood paneling and pictures of fishermen and their catches framed on the walls. Afterward, my dad filled up the car at a one-pump gas station that had a stuffed moose in front of the office. We already had reservations at a motel in Phoenix, and we'd lose our deposit if we didn't show. Otherwise, we would have spent the night in Randall, at a cute rustic inn next to a running stream, where my mom had my dad take a picture of me and my brother before we headed out. It was well over 100 degrees when we reached Phoenix, too hot even to swim, but it was getting late anyway. So we got a pizza, brought it back to our room, watched TV, went to bed, and the next morning headed for home. Back in Anaheim, sitting in our sweltering, un-air-conditioned house, we thought about that little town in the pines. And one night, when we were sitting on the back porch, looking over our neighbor's roofs at the Disneyland fireworks exploding in the sky to the east, my mom said, "It would be nice to have a little vacation home someplace like that, where we could go hiking and enjoy the fresh air, and spend our summer vacations away from it all." "It would, wouldn't it?" my dad agreed. "It would." "All right then, let's do it." Dad was an impulsive guy, and while that sometimes drove my mom crazy, it made life a lot more fun for us kids. On the way back from the dentist, for example, immediately after we'd had cavities filled, he might decide to stop off and get ice cream. Or instead of going to the hardware store as he'd originally planned, he would take me and my brother to the miniature golf course. Like I said, it often irritated my mom, but this time she had no problem with it. She was giggly and excited as my dad talked about the logistics of buying a second home. And that night, Billy and I went to sleep knowing that, even though we weren't rich, we might soon have our very own vacation house. One of my dad's friends had told him about a new development in the home trade, prefabricated houses. And the next weekend, our entire family went out to investigate. There was a company that made and sold prefab houses in Corona, and we drove down the Riverside Freeway to where a grouping of model homes were on display in a field adjacent to a gigantic lumberyard. There was a traditional cabin, a small A-frame, a medium-sized A-frame, and a large A-frame, as well as a hexagonal house topped by a bubble-like skylight that looked like a landed UFO. The houses were surprisingly affordable and came with everything except carpets and furnishings. Shingled roof, tiled floors, wall paneling, overhead lights and switches, kitchen counters and sink, stove, bathroom sink, toilet and bathtub, all were included, along with the basic construction materials, interior plumbing, and wiring. All a person had to do was put it all together, or in our case, hire someone to put it all together. It was the mid-sized A-frame that appealed most to my parents, and we walked through the model twice. The first floor consisted of a living room, an open kitchen with dining counter, and down a short hallway, a bathroom and bedroom. But it was the upstairs that captivated Billy and me. If we bought the house, the high-ceilinged loft would be shared by both of us, and we were already planning how we would divide it and where we would put our beds. Downstairs, the salesman was trying to pressure my dad into buying a house today. The kit was only $15,000, the price of a car, and it could be delivered within a week. "Well, actually, if we were to buy one, it would be for a place in Arizona. I'm pretty sure it would be too expensive to ship it. Oh, we have a branch in Phoenix, the salesman said. In fact, you could even purchase a kit today, and we could have our Phoenix branch ship it to your property. That would be great, my dad told him. If we had property. We're still in the looking stage right now. Take my card, then. And when you're ready, give me a call. I'm sure we can arrange something satisfactory. We were all excited as we drove back to Orange County, and to the cheers of me and my brother, my dad announced that next week, we would be returning to Randall, Arizona. Our family didn't have a lot of money. My dad was a junior high science teacher, and my mom was a substitute English teacher. But my parents did have summers off, which were usually spent going to the beach or doing fun free things around Southern California. We were exactly the kind of family who could really make use of a vacation home because we would be able to spend a lot of time there. I heard my parents talking low in their bedroom that night when they thought I was asleep. Do you really think we can afford it? My mom asked. It's not that much, my dad assured her. We can refinance the house and use the extra money to buy a lot. And that A-frame. But we'll need to pay someone to build it. I think we can swing it. Don't worry. Things will work out. They always do. Their voices got lower after that, so I couldn't make out what they were saying, but the tone sounded positive, and I fell asleep dreaming of all the cool posters I would put up on the roof/wall of my new loft bedroom. We did indeed return to Arizona the following week, after my dad had had the car checked out by a mechanic buddy of his to make sure it was still in good enough shape to travel. We'd driven it far already this summer, and didn't want to tempt fate, but everything seemed to be in working order, and I helped my dad change the oil. We washed the car together, and early Monday morning, well before sunrise, we were on the road. This time, my parents had made reservations at the Knotty Pine Lodge in Randall, and we arrived in town mid-afternoon, checking in and dropping off our suitcases before heading downtown to a setback log cabin that housed one of the local real estate offices. The agent was a pretty blonde woman with a thick southern accent, who my mom later said reminded her of a beauty pageant contestant. My dad told the woman what we were looking for, but seeing that we were from California, and assuming that we were wealthier than we were, she tried to steer us to large houses on large lots, a crude and tactless maneuver I'm proud to say I've never used in my own career as a realtor. We were interested in none of the properties she showed us, but while being driven around in her oversized silver Buick, we passed several empty lots with signs that read, "For sale by owner." After we thanked the agent and left, my dad drove us back to one of the owner-offered lots. There was no one around, but we got out and walked around the property, a rather small piece of land with a lot of trees, before my dad wrote down the telephone number listed on the for sale sign. He seemed to remember where all the lots were, because he drove down a narrow road, around a house-sized boulder, and through a neighborhood of ill-kept shacks, until we reached the next for sale by owner property. It was at the third lot that we came across two couples clearing brush. They hadn't been there when we'd driven past with the realtor, but now they were apparently trying to get the land in shape for selling. The man who seemed to be in charge was a bald older guy wearing thick black-framed glasses and striped overalls that made him look like a train engineer. He was directing the two women to rake up leaves, while he and the other man concentrated on clipping branches. "Hello," my dad called from his open car window. We'd pulled up parallel to the workers, and Dad waved at them from across the small culvert. "Are you the owners here?"
"We are,"
the man with the glasses said, walking up. He gestured toward the other man.
"You interested?"
My dad turned off the ignition and got out of the car. The rest of us got out as well. "I might be," Dad said.
"I'm Frank," the man said. "That's my wife Irene, and my brother-in-law George, and his wife Betsy."
My dad jumped the culvert and held out his hand.
"I'm Andy, Andy Martin." He gestured toward the for sale sign. "How big's the lot? And what are you asking for it?"
Frank didn't answer right away.
"I live right across the street there, in that house. Built it myself."
We all looked over at the home opposite the lot. Two stories, red with white trim, it resembled a barn as much as a house. A rock chimney ran up the left side of the structure, and two upstairs windows to either side of the doorway gave the impression of a face. A gravel, horseshoe-shaped driveway took up most of the land between the house and the street, with scrub brush and a single pine tree in the center of the U. George and I, we bought this property together for investment. George and Betsy lived down in the valley. At the time, I had no idea what this meant. I thought they lived in some nearby valley. But I learned later that when anyone in Randall referred to the valley, they meant the Phoenix area, which Arizonans had dubbed the Valley of the Sun. We thought it was probably a good time to sell, and since George is retired now, he and Betsy can use the extra money. What are you asking? My dad repeated. And what's the size of the property? It's a quarter of an acre, nearly half an acre with the greenbelt, Frank pointed. The land in back is owned by someone, but we've never seen him. Don't know who he is, and the lot's never been built on. Probably an investment. The green belt runs along the side there, 50 feet wide, and that gives you some privacy with the Davidson's cabin. Although that's a vacation home, and they're hardly ever there. The price? My dad prodded. Frank stroked his chin. Truth is, we haven't really figured that out yet. We kind of put the sign up before we were ready. We were planning to clear off this dead brush, trim a few trees and bushes, and see if we couldn't get a little more for it. We bought the land about 7 years ago, off the guy who sold the Davidsons their place, and paid $1,200 for it. We were thinking we could probably get three for it now. Dad had picked up a little information about the area from our tour with the realtor. He squinted skeptically at the lot. Are there sewer hookups, or is this a septic tank situation? Septic. Sewer line's still three streets away. They keep promising it's coming, but I've heard that for 5 years now, so don't hold your breath. While my dad continued to discuss details of the property with Frank, and my mom started talking to the two women, my brother and I walked through the lot. To us, it was a revelation. Unlike our home in California, with its ranch-style house placed between a front lawn and a back lawn, this land was wild. There was a kind of path that led through the brush, and it appeared to be a trail used by animals. I could see hoof prints in the dry dirt. The predominant vegetation consisted of large bushes with thick red branches and small green leaves that I later learned were manzanita. There were pine trees as well, most of them small, with pale weeds that grew within the thin branches of sticker bushes. Birds flew up from their hiding places as we approached, and a squirrel froze when he saw us, thinking we wouldn't notice him, before speeding off through the underbrush. Near the back of the lot was a big tree that was definitely not a pine, but looked more like one of those huge sprawling oaks, usually home to a clubhouse, shown on the covers of children's storybooks. I looked up at the thick branches forking off from the wide, sturdy trunk and saw where we could hammer beams and planks and make a treehouse of our own. About $2,500, my dad was saying as we walked back. That's more than double your investment, and a pretty good price for a lot with no sewer hookups. We were thinking three. George nodded. I don't think he'd said a word since we arrived. Off to the left, my mom and the two old ladies were laughing about something. Maybe we'll keep looking, my dad said, turning away. He motioned us back toward the car. Who are you going to get to build your home? Frank asked. They must have been talking about the prefab house while we were exploring. I don't know yet. Why? Do you have a suggestion? Frank gestured across the street. Like I said, I built my house from scratch. You pay me $2,000 to put your kit together, and you won't get a better deal than that. Not in this town, and we'll let you have the lot for $2,500. George nodded. I don't know, my dad said. You talk to anyone in town. Frank Watkins does quality work. Are you in construction? I was, but I'm retired now. More of a jack of all trades these days. Why don't you all come in and look at my house? Check out my work before you make any decisions. So we all walked across the street, where Frank and Irene gave us a tour of their home. Irene pointing out knickknacks they'd gotten from various trips, Frank showing off the fireplace he'd built, the wet bar he'd made. He did seem to know what he was doing. although he told us the upper floor was still unfinished and consisted of plywood floors and open walls.
"I'll work on it when I get a chance," he explained.
Billy and I were allowed to go back outside and explore. And when my mom called us back, my dad was shaking Frank's hand, and everything had apparently been decided. My dad was smiling.
"You got yourself a deal," he said.